Quick, somebody get Gary Oldman on the phone. Do I have the role of a lifetime for him? On this week's...
Comics of the Atom!
Welcome back to the Comics of the Atom series, a podcast that examines some of the most influential and important comic book runs and the people behind those creations. Like always, I'm your co-host, Michael Von Green, and the giant man, no wasp himself, my other co-host here, Carson Woodard, joins me. How's it going, man?
Oh, man, being compared to giant man, getting ready to talk about this.
Yeah.
He still needed braces, but yeah, he needs a whole jaw restructure after this read.
Yeah, as I was saying that, I was like, I think nobody ever wants to be associated with Hank Pym.
Hey, Michael Douglas did play him in a movie. That was kind of cool, I guess.
That is true. I guess he's the only likable Hank Pym
in
Marvel continuity. I don't want to get too much into it, but I'm not sure where he's at in the regular Marvel universe. The last time I think I understood was that he had become Ultron himself and he was in space or something like that. I'm not sure. I have no idea what's really going on with Hank Pym in the regular Marvel universe. But he doesn't fare too much better once we get into issue 6 here. But before we do that, do some little house cleaning with some of the creators that we didn't really touch on last time. But, you know, like we talked about, you know, Hitch's artwork is phenomenal. You know, I continue to look at these issues and just and every time, even though I've read it like twice in the last week, I'm still amazed with some of the artwork that he's able to just put out. And I think, too, you know, that's with the help of the inker Andrew Curry and also the colorist Paul Mounce, who, when I looked up, didn't realize worked with Amanda Connor a bunch. And also, and even before this, we were talking about before the podcast, He does coloring work for the Immortal Hulk series, which is currently ongoing. And if you haven't read that, highly recommend that series. It's one of the most, I think, fun and exciting series from Marvel that I've read in a long time.
Oh, yeah. You can crack open any Marvel comic and just, or even any DC comic, really, and just kind of look at, you know, the people besides the writer and the artist. Paul Mounce's name does come up a lot. So his body of work is massive and definitely deserves all the credit in the world, for sure.
When I was looking up these other creators, I stumbled upon that Curry and Brian Hitch were nominated for the 2003 Eisner Awards for like best artist inker team. But they actually lost to Kevin O'Neill for League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 2. So, which, you know, Kevin O'Neill, no slouch, but it's kind of a, yeah, I was a little torn by that because I think like the artwork in this series is so good, but I can't ignore that. Like, even though A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen Volume 2, which I think I have read, I can't tell you anything about it. His artwork's amazing too. So hard to feel bad about that. But let's get into it. So issue 6, I'll probably kind of recap this once we summarize what's happening in this issue. But I remember this issue so vividly because it's actually the epilogue to the Superhuman story arc. So if you were to go and collect this in a volume back in the day, or if you were just, you know, reading it issue by issue, you know, the team is coming off a pretty you know, strong high because they defeated the Hulk. That, you know, their the New York City applauds them for doing that, even though it's, you know, in a weird way their own fault. But what this issue starts to get into, I just remember being very stunned and horrified by it because it deals with, like, you know, a serious topic of domestic abuse, and, you know, we'll get into that. But I just remember this particular issue just always standing out, especially how it ends. So I don't know, Carson, if you had any strong remembrance of this issue, but I just know for me, like, this is the one that probably stands out from the Ultimate storyline.
Yeah, for me, it was always issue 5 that stood out, where they finally get something to hit. Like,
yeah,
even though it was the Hulk, it was another member of their own team. this was obviously, as you said, this was kind of like the fallout from issue 5, where you get to see most of the team go have a dinner together and celebrate not dying, basically. And, you know, Tony reveals some secrets you can talk about here in a second. But yeah, obviously the storyline that completely steals issue 6 is the awful domestic abuse storyline, where it seems like Hank Pym is always has to screw up somewhere. Just every time you're just like, man, he's a great hero. He was, you know, even though he got his teeth fixed by the Hulk in the last battle, that's about all he did. He at least has a good brain on him. He has cool superpowers. Like, what's this guy missing? And then he always ends up, like, either it's the 616 or the Ultimate Universe. He always seems to have this mistake where he gets out of hand, or he ends up abusing Janet or something. And in this case, it was him and Janet getting a spout, and he ends up attacking miniature Janet with ants and spraying her down with bug spray. It's a horrific scene.
Yeah, it's pretty horrifying. Even before I read this issue, I think if you were into comics, you were at least familiar with the idea that Hank Pym and Janet Van Dyne, is that right?
I believe so. Yes.
And even though here she's Janet Pym, they're already married at this, before even this the Ultimates take off. In this universe, in the Ultimate Universe. But yeah, like, you always kind of knew about that turmoil between the relationship, and yeah, that happens famously in Avengers 213 back in the day. The title of that comic is Court Martial of Yellow Jacket. So where he just slaps Janet in his Yellow Jacket costume. So, you know, yeah, he's just like Bruce Banner. He has his own hang-ups and mental issues, so he's just quick to anger and takes it out, unfortunately, on the, you know, quote-unquote love of his life. So it's just weird. I mean, it's, and they take it to another level here in the Ultimates universe, so not shy about tackling those particular issues. But before we kind of get back to that, just a recap up to this point. Yeah, it's the aftermath of the battle. So the comic opens up with people in the hospital. Then it cuts to, Nick Fury and Betty talking about how, you know, she feels partly responsible for the Hulk situation. And then, you know, Fury's like, letting her know that they're going to keep Bruce Banner's identity a secret. But what's also interesting, and there's another big thing in the next couple issues that's very influential on the Marvel film, but the Avengers movie, I mean, they just basically took the design of the Hulk room that Bruce Banner is in right now, and they put that in the helicarrier in the Avengers movie. I don't know if you noticed that, Carson.
I kind of did. Yeah. I hope Brian Hitch gets a lot of checks from Hollywood. The guy has a knack for like big time set design. Like you said, he designed the TARDIS from Doctor Who when it came back in 2005. So hopefully he got more than like a special thanks or whatever when they did that Avengers movie, because this is, and like, besides, you know, Nick Fury in this cage, like, those helicarriers, they look familiar as well throughout the whole thing too. I mean, that's pretty much the Triskelion was what they were on in that Avengers movie. And not to mention however many other times it's been used so far.
Right. Yeah, he's almost like the Jack Kirby of the 2000s or something.
I guess so,
like,
yeah.
Just like, you wouldn't have these things if it wasn't for this particular artist. So, yeah, it's very interesting to see that stuff pop up. So, but yeah, this issue is also split between, you know, the Hank and Janet abuse. But then as that's cutting back and forth, we also get this nice dinner moment with, it was supposed to be with everybody too, by the way. It just, Hank decided that, you know, his Ant-Man helmet was more important. But, you know, it's just Tony, Cap, and Thor just having this nice conversation back and forth, joking around. Tony gives Cap a present, which is like his old helmet from World War II. And as the series goes on, especially in these next couple issues, every chance Tony can talk about drinking or has the opportunity to drink, he's doing that. And the reason is, well, A, probably because he's an alcoholic, right? That's a very classic Iron Man tale. But then B, it's also revealed that, hey, I've got this tumor in my brain. And the doctor said that I could possibly die within 6 months to 5 years. And so that's why he's just very brazen, just going all out, fighting the Hulk and taking all these risks in the Iron Man suit. I often wonder, like with that line in particular, because that eventually that story element, I think, gets swept under the rug as the series goes on. Like, the Ultimates, or at least the Ultimate Universe, they were like, okay, we can take these big risks and we can do these interesting things with these characters because we have the 616. But I feel like this just never materializes into anything. So it seems like a bigger deal, but it doesn't amount to much.
Yeah, I mean, we're all these plot points you just mentioned. Do you think Mark Millar reread The Watchmen before coming up with this whole plot? I just feel like there is a lot of Watchmen injected into this whole, especially like the first six issues where, you kind of have this like crazy guy who he has his demons, but he's still fighting for the government for whatever reason. And then there's the spousal abuse between those two characters, and you have, one hero who's all about, the truth and all of that good stuff. And then you have the overpowered guy who you can't really trust. And you don't really know where his allegiances lie at this point. So I don't know, maybe I'm just reading way too much into this, but for some reason when I read these few issues, I just kept getting this Watchmen vibe from them.
Well, I think that's a good point. If you think about, this is a very cynical take on superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go and read the reviews of this series that people have done in maybe the last couple of years, you'll find a lot of the sort of the criticism of this book. Not only do people praise the art, but and the writing is good, but it does lack that fantastical, enjoyment that superheroes can bring, especially like Captain America, right? Or Iron Man, right? Like, we've been reading these, they can, not to say that they can't have serious stories, but there's definitely, there's a tone to them that is completely thrown out the window. And it's just, it's very cynical. It's this, exploratory, just like in the way that Grant Morrison did Animal Man, like you said, Alan Moore, Watchmen. It's like just more of this, like, well, let's deconstruct the superhero and let's really see if we can make them real people with flaws and really focus on the tragic side of these stories instead of like the, maybe the more positive team building that you've had for decades.
Yeah. And I just feel like they took like all of the negative vices that each of these characters ever had, gave them to them at the exact same time and dialed them up to 10, because you have Tony's alcoholism, pill popping Pym abusing his wife. You have Banner not being able to control anything,
and he's a whiny little ass.
Like, on top of it, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Captain America is kind of a jerk, like I said last time. Like,
he's completely just stuck in the 40s at this point. Anything he does has to do with the 40s,
right? He's your dad.
Exactly.
You don't want him to be that. Yeah, that's a pill. Well, hey, Pill Poppin' Pym is definitely the name of this episode. So we've got that covered again. I think it just gets darker from here. It's like HBO does Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to read as an adult, man. As a 5-year-old, I don't know what you think. You probably hate it. But that's the choice that they made. And I think that's sort of what this Ultimates line was supposed to do. Sort of like the Black Label for DC. Is that what they call that stuff now?
It's still around.
But yeah, that's super interesting. I guess Thor's currently the only one that isn't too. He's the nicest. He's the most likable one, but you don't really get to see much of him as of yet.
Yeah, because he's only got one foot in the door so far. He's just like, yeah, I'm doing this for Greenpeace or whatever. Just make sure that you write the checks to them.
I guess he's a hippie, so maybe that's his nickname.
And I guess speaking of all these insane vices and stuff, the next issue we get the brother and sister combo.
Right, yeah.
And boy, did they have an interesting run in the Ultimates.
Yeah, yeah. So the you're talking about Quicksilver and Scarlet yes. Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we sort of get introduced to them a little bit. I think that comes in issue 8.
In issue 8?
Yeah, I think
because
so.
We still get
yeah. So issue 7 is what I would like to call the Matrix issue.
Oh,
it opens up.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it's definitely. I mean, if you think. You think about the Matrix 1999, you think about X-Men 2000, and you think, okay, the Ultimate X-Men has been going on for at least, I think, a year, if not more, by this point. So the costumes, right, have gotten tweaked. They don't look like... There's colorful hints of, you know, like Hawkeye's got the purple, Black Widow is black, right? Like there's yeah. nothing there. But, like, there's that opening splash page where they're just walking down the street and they're all decked out like they're going to go fight with Neo in the Matrix. And it is not an appealing... I mean, the detail, once again, Brian Hitch, amazing. But aesthetically, it looks so bad. Thankfully, I think we're over that. Like, that period of comics where everyone decided, like, everyone needed to wear trench coats and black leather. And then maybe there's a little bit of color in there, but... I think we're over that now, but and this issue too also has this amazing opening with the you know the real St. Patrick's Cathedral in New York City, and it's just, geez, I don't know, just he must have just slaved over penciling that.
Yeah, that was an amazing having panel to ink of that. Just the cathedral, like you know, right. I mean, obviously drawing a cathedral in real life would be an achievement, but in the world of comic books, like you figured there'd be like. Some sort of like superhero splash panel, some sort of action page. He just wanted to draw the cathedral, so they made a whole page out of it, and it looked gorgeous.
Yeah, and you know, going back to your point of like you know, like the book really focusing on the negative aspects of these characters is that Millar is not shy about telling the readers, "Hey, you know, Bruce Banner, you killed 300 people when you turned into the Hulk." And you have to live with that. And that's pretty horrifying. I don't, you know, it's a villain, right? That's doing something like that. Mm-hmm. Or comics are very shy about, you know, even exploring sort of the aftermath of, you know, attacks like the Avengers or like Marvel Comics in general, right? Or just at DC, whatever, right? Every 6 months, it's a brand new event. And like, you know, X City, New York City, Metropolis, whatever. Alien invasion, buildings are getting blown up. There's no mention of thousands of people that have probably lost their lives.
Yeah, and they didn't shy away from anything here when just to like put the impact of the Hulk's actions like that. A lot of like, and you got to consider like what this came out 03, we said. I mean, there was a lot of 9/11 imagery in this scene where you see the people making memorials and posting pictures of their loved ones and stuff. Like I think that had to be swiped directly from, you know, the news and pictures after 9/11.
Absolutely. I think that was in the back of my mind when I was flipping through these pages again. And I think it's really important to remember that historical point in US culture, you know, because I think it is very influential of what you see in this book. And then there's even an explosion in a building that happens in this book. So it's kind of crazy to me that they were even doing that in New York City. Like, I think people were very, very sensitive about media and the portrayal of New York City after 9/11 for at least a decade. You know, that Spider-Man movie, the Tobey Maguire, I remember they had a teaser trailer for that movie, which was just footage that wasn't going to be in the movie, but it was like, hey, let's show you Spider-Man. And the ending of that trailer is a giant webbed helicopter that the bad guys tried to escape from the bank robbery, and it's between the Twin Towers. And that got scrubbed everywhere. I'm not sure where you can find that now. Maybe that's on a DVD, but yeah, that's just, it's so it was interesting to see some of this, like, you know, domestic terrorism that's happening within the city. And so Black Widow and Hawkeye, you're not really sure why they're attacking this building, and you'll find that out later, but there's some insanely cool moments. So it's the whole issue is basically Hawkeye and Black Widow with a team of SHIELD soldiers. Try to say that five times fast. Taking out these office workers in these buildings, and it's very cinematic. It's incredibly well drawn. It feels like a movie. And there's this real awesome Black Widow moment. Carson, I'll let you describe that, because I'd like to kind of hear someone else talk about it, and then I can relive it in my mind.
Well, yeah, you were talking about the Matrix earlier. Like, this was the most Matrix scene here, where they just walk into a building, and it's like they may as well just did the scene where they walk through the metal detectors, and everything goes off, and then they just start killing everybody and everything in their path. So that's why at first I was just like, so these are probably going to be like the nicest heroes we get. Holy crap, they just kill everybody in their path. So, like, the first dude just gets an arrow right to the dome just for, like, asking who they are. And then they kind of go from there, and then it's just chaos and all that stuff. And then finally there's that building explosion you were talking about. And then somehow Hawkeye and the other guy he's with survives this. And then what happened is, like, Black Widow, yeah, she goes all Black Widow, turns upside down and is shooting guns at the same time. Meanwhile, there's just, like, bodies piling up everywhere with arrows sticking out of them. And Natasha is somehow able to carry on a conversation with Hawkeye over the comms. And Hawkeye's like, can we not, I'm trying to focus here, like, and then he gets kind of blown up. And yeah, that's when the explosion happens.
And then there's that very cool moment. Yeah, like Hawkeye is dangling with whoever, and there's still a couple people alive, the bad guys. And Black Widow tells the helicopter, like, hey, I need you to drop your rifle. I'm going to jump out the window and I'm going to save Hawkeye. And the way that it's drawn and framed is just incredibly cinematic in a way that comic books often don't do. I was kind of thinking about that, the way that it's framed. It just seems like it's out of a movie, or, you know, like we were saying, The Matrix. It's just crazy to look at that. I really wish you saw more of that stuff inside of issues.
Yeah, just wait till that Black Widow movie comes out. We'll see if this scene is in that movie.
Oh man, yeah, that would be cool. It looks like there is just a lot of insane jumping around and guns flying everywhere. Yeah, if that movie ever comes out, we'll see. But anyway, one of the other underlying stories is picking up after issue six. Hank Pym has disappeared, and Fury is just, I mean, this is just sort of an introduction to Black Widow and Hawkeye, but it also ends with Captain America finding the location of Pym as Fury is sort of debriefing the Black Ops team. And then, you know, I think at that point too, you see in the background Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch, you know, very close to each other, which is the cover for issue 8. By the way, I love issue 7. It's got this, you know, cool cover with Black Widow. She's hanging upside down. I always really like that cover. But yeah, the Quicksilver Scarlet Witch, which they had already sort of, you know, Mark Millar's writing that series too. You know, yeah, it's definitely incestuous, and it gets way worse, especially in Ultimate Volume 3 when Jeff Loeb takes over.
Yeah, people may be robots by then. I can't remember anymore.
Oh, yeah, it gets real bad and weird.
Yeah.
We won't be reading those.
Nope, sure won't.
Nope.
Pass.
Yeah, pass on that. You just need to do this first volume. We'll talk about the second volume at next episode. But yeah, it's I think this first volume is really where you can start and stop. But anyway, yeah, so that's just I think I think we just did a big combination of issue 7 and 8. That's all right. So anyway, too, one of the notes here, I said, like, I just, like, you know, you're talking about Brian Hitch and art, like, I love how he just decides to draw, like, every little piece of hair on Hawkeye's, like, buzz cut. It's kind of crazy how much detail he spends on that. But anyway, you know, as ramping up here to, you know, issue 9, like I said, you know, Captain America is on the hunt for Hank Pym. Fury is debriefing the team after this office fight that Hawkeye and Black Widow have been involved with. And so now we have the rest of the Avengers showing up because it's revealed to them that, hey, the rest of the team, that these weren't, you know, normal people that you were fighting. They are, in fact, a group of aliens called the Chitauri. And then boom, that's where the Avengers movie probably gets its biggest lift from this series, is that they have an alien race that no one had ever heard of until the Ultimates series. And now they're, I believe, part of the normal 616 universe now, like everything that comes out of that
movie. I'm pretty sure they were in the, at least off the top of my head, I know they were like in the Thanos stuff that Lemire and Donny Cates contributed to. They were fully working for Thanos, just like they were in the movie.
Yeah, so it's they are now fully integrated. So I would say this is maybe one of the biggest, besides like the Chris Gillian, you know, this is probably one of the biggest influences that this series has, not only on the movie, but then the movie, of course, trickles that down. So it's just this reciprocal, just influencing circle, which is, I think, is great. You know, why not? But anyway, it's revealed that, hey, the Chitauri have been around forever. They were helping the Nazis. They can shapeshift. You know, whatever. They're kind of boring, I think. They're actually way cooler looking in the movie. I think the movie did a much better job of just, you know, making them more interesting than anything you'll see in this series.
I'm surprised when you're talking shape-shifting aliens, why didn't they just go with the Skrulls, I wonder?
I don't know. I think, I mean, probably in the same vein of, like, why didn't they call this the Avengers?
Yeah.
Because I think they're just trying to do their own thing. Yeah, the Ultimates series, and, well, the Ultimate Comics in general, were just, it was always fascinating, right? Because issues would come out, and, for example, like, issue 8 has that Quicksilver Scarlet Witch cover. They're barely in the issue. They don't really do anything other than, like, be gross in a couple panels. So it was always this big tease of, right, like, oh man, oh whoa, they're gonna do Hawkeye now, oh whoa, they're gonna do Black Widow, you know, oh man, they're gonna do Nightcrawler in Ultimate X-Men, oh, they're gonna do the Venom Saga and Ultimate Spider-Man. So I think it's just which is exciting, but I guess that's kind of goes against the point that you were just making, like, why wouldn't they just make these Skrulls? So I don't know. Maybe Millar just wanted to do his own thing. Yeah. You know, even the leader, you know, as we'll find out, like, in the next issue or two, you know, is a leader, like the Chitauri leader, someone that Captain America fought during World War II. It's higher Kleiser.
My only guess is, like,
who cares?
They were kind of planning Fantastic Four at that point. So I guess they're just like, well, if we're doing Fantastic Four, we got to save the Skrulls for that. But it sounds like on paper, what we just described as the main threat is, like, almost the Skrulls exactly. So exactly. It's just kind of weird to me that, like, if everything else is so influenced by the 616, I was just kind of surprised, like, they didn't just go with the Skrulls. But hey, whatever, Mark Millar, if he gets a creative credit anytime someone says the word Chitauri, then good on him.
Yeah. I mean, I think, that's a great point that you bring up, and I think it probably has to do with a little bit of a gatekeeping, a little bit of, like, let's try to tell our own story and not have to worry about because as soon as you open that door, right? Yeah, with the Skrulls, they're planning on Ultimate Fantastic Four, but then, like, do you have to deal with that right away? Do you have to deal with the Kree right away? You know, so I think it's probably too complicated, and it's just easier to have just a dumb alien race that nobody will ever care or talk about again until the Avengers movie. So Captain America, he's tracking down Hank. He finds him in a bar in Chicago called the Red Lion, or the Red Lion Pub, which is funny enough, like a real place in Chicago. I looked it up because I was just curious. I was like, you know, I wonder if this is real. It doesn't look exactly like that, but it's very eerily similar. So it has to be, it's up near DePaul. So it has to be Millar maybe went to Chicago once, or...
I definitely met him in a Wizard World in the 2000s, so it's very possible he could have
maybe went there and was like, yeah, took a picture and it was like, all right, this is what we're going to model this bar off of.
And you know what's funny? Kind of off topic, but I did ask him when I met him, because there's been the age-old question with him. Is it pronounced Millar or Miller? And he was just kind of like, whatever you want. So I'm just like, okay.
Oh, that's interesting. I used to say Miller.
Yeah, I heard,
yeah, which didn't make sense to me because I just remember, I mean, it's AR, not ER, but then I heard people pronouncing it Millar, and I was like, okay, well, A, that sounds cooler anyway.
Yeah.
And then B, if everyone else is saying it, that's funny that he did not commit.
Yeah, he just didn't really care. He's like, whatever. If you're here, you're a fan. Thank you.
Thank you. That's awesome that he didn't care. Luckily you didn't get into a fight in the way that Captain America and Hank Pym are now going to get into a fight. And so, you know, like you were mentioning earlier, CIA is trying to solve all his problems 1940 style. And so how does this go down?
He basically just goes and immediately intimidates him. He sees nothing but just scum and villainy in Hank Pym. And he wants them, not only does he want to beat him, he wants him to turn giant. So he calls him a moron. He's like, give me something I can hit. And then he finally just turns big and like puts his hand through a wall to get the cap. And then if I remember right, Cap, that's when he starts to smile finally. And he's happy finally has a fight on him. But I do like the splash page of when Pym does turn big. He goes, is this big enough for you, moron? And he's like all big, and you see the blood trickling for where Cap hit him first, and his eyes are almost like red and bloodshot. But yeah, when Cap kind of gets his bearings back, looks up and smiles, you know Hank Pym is screwed. Even though he's like 59 feet taller than Cap, he still doesn't stand a chance.
He kicks his ass. It's a fun fight.
He literally learned nothing from the Hulk fight. He got attacked the exact same way. Cap goes right for the face, which I think is, you know, intentional by, you know, both Hitch and Millar. They're just like, well, Cap obviously looked at the strategy the Hulk used against Pym and used that against him here, because Cap is, you know, a strategist at heart. So I think that was definitely on purpose, that it was almost framed and paneled pretty closely to what they did in issue 5.
Oh, that's a great observation. I think you're absolutely right. There's definitely a parallel there, even though he's got two punching bags below that probably would be
right
equally, if not more painful. But you can't draw that and sell it, at least not in a Marvel comic book. That's a cool fight. And then it turns to Bruce and Betty having a conversation. I think Betty has felt incredibly terrible about the way that she has treated Bruce, but she's definitely flirting and hitting on Bruce, which is interesting. And I think they continue that conversation in later issues. So you kind of start to understand, you know, why Bruce and Betty may have been a couple when, you know, very early on, it seemed impossible. And then we get a big splash page of the Iron Man suit, which I will never get over about how weird it just looks. I appreciate the effort trying something new, but man, it is just a bizarre looking thing. Tony, like I said earlier about Tony being a real drunk, there's a great conversation between him and Natasha, Black Widow. you know, he's, she's like, hey, you know, you shouldn't have a couple, should you be drinking this much? And he has some quip about, you know, you tried driving this thing sober. And then, you know, Steve thinking, oh, I've done the right thing. I've helped out a teammate, goes and visits, you know, the Wasp in recovery. And, you know, it just does not go as planned. And she's even more upset that she went and did something like that. And, you know, you don't know, you know, like we've said, she even has that live, this is not how you, you can't solve the things that you, the same way that you did in 1945. So it's Captain America learning, Steve Rogers learning some real, you know, life lessons here in the early 2000s, which he has this great moment too. I think it's in the next issue when he started with Furies, you know, he mentions like, you know, people have to remember, to me, like 1945 was like last week. And I thought that was a great line because I don't know how often comics really explore that mental thinking. Like, it must be just insane to think like, you know, he's a soldier. That's what he's going to do. He's a man. You know, I'm a man's man. I'm going to do what I need to get done, you know, in order to win the day, to win the girl. But all the things that he has learned, except for being a soldier, is just thrown out the window.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. With Cap, he is just out of time here. Like, literally, it's like the Wasp was just giving him nothing. Wasp was basically just saying like, you know, this is none of your business. So you need to, you know, stay out of it. And she is just not happy with Cap at all. She's not happy with her situation, and she's especially not happy with her image at this point. She doesn't want to be anywhere near the Ultimates. She is put in for a transfer to Germany at this point. So, but unfortunately for her, she is about to be forced right back into the Ultimates, whether she wants to be or not.
Yeah. And one of the things too, I just remembered that I had written down, but I forgot to cover early on when I was getting those issues 7 and 8 mixed up, was that, you know, there's this moment that Betty takes Hank. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not Hank. Tony and Steve to a diner to talk about the relationship between Hank and his wife. And I thought that was like an incredibly real conversation about why are people in abusive relationships, or the people that even know that's happening to their friends? Like, there's just like there's this naivete or this hope of like, well, things will get better. Maybe things aren't like that anymore. And it's just, you know, why do these things happen? So it's just, once again, this other incredible, awful dose of reality that I think it is great. Like, it's a great written moment, but, you know, tragically, it's a great written moment, but, you know, it just makes these characters feel more real, but in a way that I don't think anyone's feeling very comfortable about. But like you said, back to the Wasp. Yeah, she wakes up in the next issue, sort of to an empty hospital, because S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Ultimates are off to Micronesia because they've, you know, discovered that the Chitauri are there. They're planning this big invasion. They thought that they had pretty much been extinct after World War II. Or there was only a couple wandering around, but they've realized, oh man, this is a much bigger force at play. And so the Wasp wakes up, and what happens?
She's thirsty. She needs some water, but her little buzzer bell thing, no one's responding to it. So she finally just gets up and gets out of her room and sees this whole hospital full of workers and not one of them are helping her. So she goes out, begs for a cup of water, and they're just like, oh, you're too tired. You need to go back to your room. We'll bring that water right away. Oh, I have to use the bathroom. Oh, go back to your room. You can use the little... She's like, I'm 26. I'm not going to use that potty pan thing.
Yeah, that's his little grandma.
She senses there's about to be a gun pulled on her, and she shrinks, and the person, you know, trying to take her back to her room, eats a bullet to the back of the head. And that's where all the chaos erupts. Well, both in the hospital and in Micronesia as well.
Yeah, it's almost, you think, like, you know, with the Chitauri, like you said earlier, it's like the Skrulls. And then I remember reading this again thinking, like, oh, yeah, is this like Hydra? Or is there going to be a bigger reveal that the Chitauri are working with somebody else And no, it's just the Chitauri. And so across the planet, they descended upon this base. Thor arrived earlier, couldn't find anybody. Fury is very upset. You know, Tony, you know, you go check it out. And so they're scouring this island, and there's just this nice juxtaposition between what's happening on the island and you know, Janet trying to get away from the bad guys at the headquarters, and you know, they're locking down the building, they're taking over, you know, the facility, and then, you know, you see this, like, this really cool panel, like Captain America screaming Tony. You don't know why he screams his name. You'll find that out in the next issue. But then there's also a cut to a countdown timer. Of course, we all know that's a bomb. And then boom, it must have been some type of radioactive nuclear explosion. People get wiped. Seems like the entire SHIELD organization and the Ultimates are dead. And then you end the issue with the most famous Marvel villain of all, the Chitauri leader, Haer Kaiser, that everyone is so familiar with and talks about to this day.
Yeah, at least he's drawn cool.
He almost reminds me of somebody, but I couldn't put a finger on him. I'm
the same way.
I was trying to think, like, what actor did they model this?
Evil bad guy Gary Oldman from the early 2000s.
There you go.
Or Gordon, I don't know.
There you go.
He kind of does remind me of just a little bit of Gary Oldman in The Fifth Element, except for, like, the weird haircut, like, just in the face.
Yeah. And we'll just we'll leave it at that. A short one this time, or like where we would like to be, I guess, in terms of time with this stuff. But yeah, it's starting to ramp up. I think, sort of echoing the thoughts that I had earlier in the episode, that issue 6 will always be sort of branded in my brain just because of the real life horrors that it deals with the domestic abuse and those characters and the way that Hank just treats, you know, the Wasp. It's truly horrifying. You know, who are the real monsters? I wonder if that's what they're trying to pull here with some of this stuff. But it's, I would say at this point, you know, I think the next couple issues are much more exciting. But it's going back to it, you know, it's cool to see some of the stuff that the movie, you know, picked up on and made their own. But really, you know, I would say if you think about Ultimate Spider-Man and you think about Ultimate X-Men, where Ultimate X-Men, you know, deal with Magneto in their first story arc, of course, Ultimate Spider-Man, you know, Green Goblin is pretty much, is the main villain there too in that first story arc. This is just like, you get the Chitauri? Really? Like, I know that, like, you have the other issues too. I think Iron Man is probably happening. I you know, in terms of the Ultimate Comics, I've never read any of the other stuff besides X-Men, Spider-Man, and Ultimates. So I don't know if they're saving those villains for those main issues. But to me, it's, like, very disappointing that they just didn't do anything. You know, it's crazy to me that I know what they're doing with Thor, so maybe Loki didn't make sense, but man, who would have been, I mean, at least, like, it should have been Red Skull or something like that, right? At the end of this, not this unknown character that just exists in this universe.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of waiting for too, and I'm just like, oh, it's this guy. Okay. It just seems like it's just about them interacting with each other rather than having a villain of the arc, I guess, but they seem to be almost as villainous as the worst villain can get in some cases, especially with Hulk and Hank Pym.
I think you may have hit the nail on the head there. I think that's probably the point.
My other kind of criticism of this is, if you're putting together the Ultimates or whatever, and you have such crazy loose cannons like Thor and drunk Tony Stark, why didn't you just give Hawkeye and Black Widow the call to begin with?
Yeah.
Like, they, like, seem so much more qualified than, with the exception of Cap. Like, obviously, Cap, if they have a Captain America at their call, once they get him thawed out and ready to go, like, I get that, of course. Like, why wouldn't you have Cap on the team? He is the Avenger. But If all they had to do was say, like, hey, all these people left or went insane, we need you on the team now. Why didn't they just bring them in from the beginning?
Well, I guess they are murderers on a daily basis, so maybe maybe from a PR standpoint.
I
don't know. Yeah, you can start to pick some. You should really start some.
There's red in your ledger.
Yeah, exactly.
Like their ledgers are dripping in red.
Yeah, they filled up the entire southern hemisphere.
Yeah.
with their ledger. But whatever, it's cool. They're wearing sunglasses and trench coats. nothing wrong with that. So yeah, that'll wrap it up, and then we'll finish up this volume one. And like I said, we'll kind of briefly talk about volume two, but we won't get into that volume in detail like we did with these single issues. So I mean, like I said, it's cool to see, you know, go back and see like how influential this comic series was for the movies and how it evolved. But you know, looking forward to kind of wrapping this up and moving on to the next thing. But in the meantime, Carson, where can people, I know you're doing some cool stuff on your channel, in the next couple of weeks, right?
Oh yeah. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, of course, YouTube. You search seawoodard19 or youtube.com/seawoodard19. You can find me there. I'm going to be doing some Halloween reading, and I'm going to start a segment on October 1st called October Reads. And basically what I'm going to try to do is I'm going to attempt to read and review a book every day in the month of October. So I've already got the first two in the can, luckily. So I'm starting off with Walking Dead issue 33, Michonne versus the Governor. It's my first ever Walking Dead issue I ever read. And boy, was that violent. Spoilers.
That was your first one. I did not know that.
Yeah, I kind of was just thinking, like,
what a hell of a way to start
exactly, yeah. And I just backtracked from there. I'm just like, well, that was interesting. I got to see what this book's about. Because I kept hearing people talk about The Walking Dead, this and that, and this character named the Governor and his character Michonne, and this is where they fight. So, like, okay, I'll get that issue, because I had, like, one left on the rack, of course, because it was The Walking Dead in the early 2000s that it was never ordered. So, yeah, I decided to revisit that, and I forgot how gruesome and insane that was. So this was kind of like, you know, My Little Pony in comparison to Walking Dead, issue 33. And then we're going to read some House of Secrets, issue 100 is going to be my second one. So just to let you guys know what's going on there. I'll probably be having a Tuesday night live stream tomorrow. Well, I guess for you guys, it's a Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern every Tuesday. So I'll be talking about some art I just acquired, some pickups, and I just found my action figures from when I was a kid out of my parents' basement. So that was kind of cool. Been cleaning up some action figures. And then on Mondays, we do Modern Men on the Comic Core channel. This Monday, by the time this comes out, we'll have had live our episode about Shirtless Bear Fighter. So that's what we're going to be reviewing tonight. I'm not sure how that won a poll, but it did. So that was interesting how that won. And then we're going to be revisiting our movie topic. So we're going to look at movies, comic book related, that came out in the year 2016. And maybe we'll get into some 2017. We'll see. But should be a good episode tonight of Modern Men as well.
What is 2016? Is that...
Guardians 2.
Guardians 2?
Yeah.
Nice.
And probably... Okay. I think we covered Batman versus Superman already. We already crapped on that one, so I can't. It was probably about Wonder Woman, and maybe that's 2017. But anyway, tune in to find out what movies we'll be talking about.
To this day, I still don't think I've seen Batman versus Superman all the way through. There was a point where, in the theater, I definitely was like, "I'm just going to the bathroom because I can't take this."
I should have went to the bathroom and just left after that.
And then, so there's a good like 20 minutes.
Hashtag keep the Snyder Cut. But I did watch the Snyder Cut finally like a month and a half ago. Actually, it was for the previous review we did. It still sucks. I'm sorry.
Oh, he has a cut for that. What? How?
It came out on Blu-ray.
That movie's already way too long.
It was longer. I don't remember what they added. I just remember the time was long.
That is honestly one of the worst movies I think I've ever seen. I mean, I can't believe people find any... I don't know how you get any kind of enjoyment out of that film. Like, if you love those characters, it just breaks my heart.
It's a Batman movie with Superman as the main bad guy. skip it if you can. If you haven't seen it for some reason, you're listening to this, pass. Just pass on it. Don't watch it. Don't ask for the Snyder Cut. Don't think there's a good version of that movie. There isn't. Pass.
And they have Doomsday at the end, which is just fucking insane to me. Like,
oh, you haven't even mentioned Lex Luthor, dude.
Oh, and Lex. Oh my god, just, you know, oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. Don't ever watch that movie. I mean, maybe because you have to understand how bad it is, but it's just, it is atrocious. But anyway, I could do a 5-hour podcast on that movie.
We might have to at some point. Just to
get which means I would have to watch it again. So I don't know.
Yeah, good point. No, we're never doing
it. Ugh, yeah, so maybe I'll never do that. That's nobody needs that in the world. Yeah, so you can you can find my rants anywhere at Raptors Revenge. Speaking of Halloween and spooky stuff, I think we'll have to figure out, you know, we'll do like another like one-off podcast in October, just maybe focused on, you know, Halloween stuff. I know, you know, offline we were talking about, you know, some classics Marvel stuff like Tomb of Dracula, which I would love to read, especially when Blade is introduced into that series. I believe that's where Blade makes his first appearance.
Yeah, I think it's Tomb of Dracula 10, if I remember right.
Yeah, so that's really cool. Maybe we should read that. And I always loved, I don't think I've ever read it, any of the issues, but I always loved the title Werewolf by Night. I always thought that just sounded like really cool.
Reitzen and Lynn Wine Swamp Thing as well.
Oh, there you go. We'll just... we'll just kind of talk about some classic horror stuff. And, you know, if you don't know too, maybe this will be great. Horror and comics have like a pretty strong past, and there's like some, you know, interesting government intervention that happened with comics and stuff like that, and horror comics especially. So maybe we'll kind of, you know, review some of that stuff, go down quote unquote memory lane. So anyway, thanks for joining us again, and we'll catch you next time.
Later.